don't know. Right. Okay. Oh, okay. Here's the situation. Rashi explains. He says, an idolater, okay, he has a barrel. And Ma'ora Hayayin, and he's pouring the wine, Midana Lekuba, from, let's say, from the barrel into, let's say, a pitcher. Okay? And then actually, who has the pitcher? It's the Jew, right? Yaakov Elchaber, right? Okay. Let's see, my eyes straight over here. Okay, right. The Yisrael Akuba, right? So, Chamra Asir, he says that the wine is prohibited, all right? So, if the idolater is holding the barrel and he's pouring it into the pitcher which was held by the Jew, then that wine is prohibited. My Tama, and what is the reason? It says, Kiko Osi Mekayach Eved Kochavim. Because who is providing, who is using the manpower? Who is doing the action? Right. It's the idolater, right. He's doing the hard work. Exactly. So he's doing the work and the other one is only holding. That's all that he's doing. Okay. So that therefore this wine is prohibited. This goes back to something that we had also a couple of weeks ago, where again I spoke at that time about the parallel that we have with washing our hands. When we wash our hands before a meal, you have to use a keli in order to, because you have to have koyach gavra, you have to use human force in order to do it right. You can't simply stick your hands underneath the force and call it wash. Yeah. So, okay.
You can't make a case for gravity.
Right. Correct. Right. Right.
The last force is gravity, not by
right. Right. So who is the one who's the koyach in this kai? It's the idolater, right? So therefore, since he's providing the manpower, so to speak, so it's osir, okay? It's
isn't
what Rav Papa says.
It's probably to, a function today, when, if you were going to serve wine, as to who pours the wine.
Yeah.
It has to do with what kind of wine, of course.
Yeah.
But isn't that a prohibition still...
The prohibition is there, except, as I told you, inasmuch as we insist that most wine should be bishul, mevushul, right. So that being the case, that's how we get around it.
That's how we get around it, but
right,
the law
right.
actually does extend it.
Correct,
it
correct.
It seems like right. too rigid or harsh or punitive, whatever you call it, strict, a eastward. It does, because it's, I mean, this is just how I see it. I can understand where the Aved Kochavim touches the wine.
Yeah.
Can possibly make a case where, you know, sort of like it has some, it may relate to like doctor's practice, but this seems almost like the person who's trying to measure the wine or whatever, he's working with the wine, and it's necessary to have work done with the wine. So unless you have a completely Jewish workforce, then you have a problem with all the wine being prohibited. I mean, I can see where it can be.
Okay,
here,
but
it seems
as I
like
say, this
difficult.
Is the reason why, in order to avoid the problem, this is why practically most of the wines that we Jews drink today is mevushul. In order to enable us, you know, that we should not fall into this problem.
Yeah. If it's mevushel, then we have no problems.
No, the problem doesn't exist. Right.
Well, that's a triviality.
Right. Right. Can I ask you this?
But if they boil it, then
doctrine of Rose Wynn, wasn't it? Did it come about the time that...
We learned it over here, in the Gemara Avodah Zarah. That was the question. Yeah, or going back...
Okay, so
many dappen back we
okay,
had
thank you for
where
that out
right, right. Where they said that mevushel is not right.
So I see what you're saying.
Right.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Label it
sorry to waste.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let me just finish the part of the sentence over here.
Yeah. They have.
Yeah. Okay, hello. Yisrael, if it is a Jew, Adonai, who is holding the barrel, right? The Oved Kekhove Makubo, and it is the idolater who is holding the pitcher into which he's which the Jew is pouring. Then it says Chamra Shori. Then in that particular case, the wine is permitted. Okay.
But on the other hand, it will still affect who you hire, because I can't see the boss picking up the barrel while the worker holds the pitcher.
Right.
I mean, that is an unnatural state of affairs.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't finish the next three words yet. The Yivet Sabet Sedude, but if you know, the idolater who is holding the pitcher in this particular case, if he turns it on its side, in other words, he moves it back and forth, then what?
Oh, it's like Mr.
So, then it's prohibited. Okay. All right, so we'll stop at this point.
What is he doing with the pitcher?
If he moves it, it's
he moves the pitcher, right. He stirs it around. Yeah. He stirs it, so that makes it prohibited. All right. So that's where we stand right now. Okay. First of all, let's identify today is already the 18th of April. Pesach is in the past already, and we are now resuming our regular study. And we continue now in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, Daf Samach on the Aleph, in the middle of the place, in the middle of the Daf, the Aleph. Omar Papa, the Papa said, Hi Ovid Kechovim, the Dore Zika, right, says, here you have the following case. You have a goy, and he's dragging a wineskin, Zika. According to Rashi, that's what a Zika is in this case, okay?
Wine what?
A wineskin. Wineskin,
yeah,
right,
okay.
You know, in other words, in those days, very often, they would take the skin of an animal, a bladder or something like that, and use it in order to hold wine.
Rabbi
Oscar
says a leather flask.
A leather flask, all right. Those say, take your pick. Right, okay. We may need him yet. All right. Because of Yisrael Acharei, okay? And a Jew was walking right behind this guy, okay? So the question is, what about the wine that the guy is carrying? Is it Yei Nesef or is it not, right? That's the question. So he says, Malya Shorei, the Lebe Karkash. Chasera also Bilbo Be Karkash. Okay? He says, if the wineskin is full of wine, then in that particular case, the wine is permitted. Permitted either in one of the two ways that I mentioned. But usually, when they say permitted, in the case of wine, it's, you know, they could sell it to the guy. Okay? But not necessarily the Jew could drink it. Not necessarily that, but you know, not enough to suffer total permitted to sell. The question is, can you know, if the guy doesn't, if the guy actually uses it for a mitzvah, then in that case, it's also. And also means not just that it's prohibited to the Jew for drinking, but it means also he's not even allowed to derive any benefit, whatever, from it. Whereas if he's permitted to sell it, at least he's not taking a loss on the wine. Okay.
Wine is it?
And this particular case happens to be wine that was being carried by the guy. Question is, oh, I mean, it was a Jewish wine that the guy was carrying. This it doesn't say. Doesn't say that.
That the murky part.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's something the murky. Right.
If it was not Jewish wine,
right,
they wouldn't even have any reason to be considering the issue.
They should not. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Right. So therefore, I would have to assume that maybe this was Jewish wine that he was carrying in the flask, okay? Let's say he picked it up from the Jew or something like that.
Maybe
he bought it from whatever. So at any rate, the ruling here is that if the skin, the wine skin, is full, then it's permissible. Why? Because the normal karkash, we know that it's impossible for the goy to have stirred it. Okay. Right. Right. But chasera, if it's empty, also, it is prohibited. Why? Dilma bekarkash. Because it's possible, you know, that he stuck his hand into it and he mixed it around. So, that being the case, then that of course would make it also. Okay. Rashi's comment is simply that the Jew following him, he says, the he saw that the guy did not actually stick his hand into it, you see. So, because obviously if, you know, he did, then of course it would be a different story. All right. Now, so far we're talking about a wineskin. How about kuba? What is kuba? Kuba is, you know, like an open jar or something like that, okay? Open jug, okay? So, manya osir. So, it's punfakelt, right? If it is full, it is prohibited. Whereas, if it's empty, then in that case, it's permissible.
Right, is any opposite?
Yeah.
Can't become an empty.
Huh?
You don't mean empty.
It's empty. Well, I mean empty in the sense that there's hardly anything left in it. And that's it. Right. Why? According to Rashi, the Ein Kirkush Bechli Pasuch, he says that you cannot stir, or you don't stir an empty one. There has to be enough wine in it to make it worthwhile to stir it as a libation, you understand? But if there's hardly any wine, I mean, you're being too stingy with it. In that case, it's not proper. The afogad the chidori lei, yev shobolo tirkash, the at. Now, the surprising thing is, you know, that even though, you know, when he carries it, when he drags it, if you wish, it's impossible not to stir it a little bit. But kevin the lei nichalo the kikushke, but inasmuch as this is not what his intention was in order to stir it. You see, here we're talking about intention. So, why? Because since it's open, if he starts to fool around with it, it's liable to spill out altogether. He'll lose it. So he doesn't dare to do it. So, how he lay, then this creates a situation, that he used his own force, but without the intention of making it a Venezuela. Umuta, and it's permissible. Avon Zika, Heve Kirkush, Vedeva Mishachir, Vedeva Nesach. But in the case of the wineskin itself, where we said that if it's full, then there's no possible. Yeah, what did we say over there? We said, so, you're right, we said that if it's full, then it's permissible, right? Whereas if it's empty, not. So, Rashi says, with a wineskin, yes, you could have stirring, and it would seem, you know, that it's, you know, that it's fooling around with it, and therefore it's Jainesa. So, if it's full, well, but if it's empty, so just as we said, just the opposite. The jug has the opposite ruling for the wineskin. Okay.
But you think the difference is between a wineskin and a jug? that's the difference?
Yeah, that's the difference. According to this, that's what I say. I'm talking according to Rashi, but this is how he understands the text. That's the point. Right. Right. Right.
The
cowboy. Sure, he had to let no go because, you know, he didn't touch it, so it didn't touch the wine.
Okay.
So, Rav Ashi Omar, of course, needless to say, Rav Ashi says, Zika, Bein Madio, Bein Chaseira, Shore. Now, he gives a very liberal ruling over here, Rav Ashi. He says that in the case of the wineskin, whether it's full or it's, you know, empty, relatively empty, of course, we mean, it's permissible. My Tama, for what reason? Because he says, Ein derech nisur bechach. Because he says that the goyim do not, make libations to Aveda Zera with the wineskin itself. As long as it's still within the wineskin that has been taken out, so they don't make that. Obviously, then what he implies, what he implies is that if a guy wants to make a libation to his idol, right, he wants to use something dignified. Now, a jug, a jar or something, you know, this is already, it has more class, shall we say, than the wine. Right, right. Of course. Right. It's closed. Right now it's closed.
He has to
right.
be able to see it.
Who, the guy?
Yeah.
Essentially, he pours it out. Either he stirs it, or he pours it out, one or the other. According to the libations and the Beis HaMikdash, then the libations actually considered a pouring from a pitcher, and there were spouts in the Mizbeach itself, and the altar, the outer altar, you know, where the korbanos were sacrificed, where you poured the wine into the spout. So actually, how do you do it? You do it from a pitcher. So that was the Jewish way of making a libation. Presumably, among the goyim, they had something similar to it. But this business of stirring, apparently this was also an action of the idolaters and serving their deity and so on.
I can just picture them doing it with some kind of an incantation.
Of course.
Boiling trouble.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Now we have a different case. Ma'atzwa Zaira. Ma'atzwa is like, it says it's a wine press, gas. Right, right. So wine press, he says, which in order to get the wine, they don't tread on the grapes. Yes. That we learned before, you know, that was a common way, that you stepped on it, and so, you mean, like we saw in those old Italian pictures once upon a time. But this, how do they get the wine? They have boards that press down upon it, okay? And apparently they also had a device. You want to show an art scroll over here?
Yeah.
Like a great big corkscrew that you press down.
Yeah, they use the same system.
Right. Like an old screw. Right. Right, right.
You see?
Yeah.
Right, right. So, you know, as you turn it around, the screw so presses upon the grapes. And so on. And
is used in other ways.
Yeah, it could very well be. And let's say if it's an area which is not covered by that, so then they simply put boards on them, you know, and let the pressure of the boards also crush the grapes and produce the wine. Right. So this is what he means over there. So the purpose story, the purpose says that it's, of course, now here we're talking about what? We're talking about one that belongs to whom? The goyim.
The goyim.
Right?
It's operated by an idolatry, yeah. So it must be.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah.
So probably permits the wine press.
Yeah. All right, so Rav Papa Shori, right, and Rav Ashi, the Tema Rav Shimi Barashi, either Rav Ashi or some say it was his son Shimi Barashi, or son, he prohibits it. Why? So they say, B'chaychei kuli alma le pliga dosa. If the guy applies the pressure, you know, he's pressing down upon it, there's no question, then what? Then it's prohibited, okay? Because he's using his koyach. Again, remember we had that idea before that if he uses his force in order to do it, his koyach, then in that particular case that would make it prohibited. So, tiflige. So the machlokes, the difference of opinion between Rav Papi and Rav Ashi as to whether it's permitted or prohibited, right? It's b'chayach koychei, literally using the strength of strength itself. In other words, like indirect. Right. Instead of him first, right, 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 yeah.
Use a lever,
right.
You know,
yeah.
You know, so here you're using the screw.
Right. It says, yeah. Rashi says, right. The galgil galgil turns around that wheel over there.
Yeah.
Shekorin viz. It's a French word for you know, like a vise. A vise, right? The hibba pelas hakira. It causes the you know, the beam to lower, to get lower and lower, and so on. Okay. So, this is how he explains it. Okay. So, everybody's in agreement that it would be permissible. So, where is the machlokes? There is, however, machlokes as to whether, if the guy did it with his own force, whether that makes it permissible or prohibited. We said it was prohibited, but maybe not. Maybe there's a case where it would be permissible. So they say, Haver Rivdo, happened that what? There was an event that the Chayach Kerche, okay, that he used indirect force, right? As we said before, he turned the wheel, and the wheel pushed the board down, and so on. And what happened over there? The Osar Rav Yaakov in the Har Pekod. Okay, and Rav Yaakov, who came from the town, the Har Pekod, prohibited it. So, in spite of the fact that there is a difference of opinion as to whether in such a case it's permissible or prohibited, but Rav Yaakov said, no, it is prohibited. Okay.
So what's the final decision?
It's prohibited. How do I know that's the final decision? I pointed out to you before. If you take a look, you see that little zion over there on top, over there, right? You go to the upper left-hand corner. You see a column over there which is marked Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah.
Right.
You see it?
In Zion.
It's there on the margin. The upper part of the margin.
I see everything. I don't see
on the
anything.
On the left-hand column, left-hand margin. Left-hand margin.
I'm looking, but I don't
top
see
of the left, top of the page, left-hand part, margin.
Right up here. Yeah, this one's
right
up here.
Right.
Oh.
Or is it Zion, the Tzadik of Zion?
I was looking for the Zion.
Okay, you see that.
Yeah.
All right. What does it represent? This column tells you where in some of the outstanding codes you'll find this decision made. Okay? and you take a look, you know, each one that they mention over there has a little letter to tell you where to find it. In this particular case, the letter that we find is Zion, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you go down. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav, Zion. It's the last one over there. You see that?
Yeah.
Okay, right. And here it says, Tur Shulchan Aruch, Sham Tzaif Beis. Now, of course, Sham means it's already been mentioned in the same, so you have to look back again to see, okay? And, okay. So, where do we find it? The answer is Tur Shulchan Aruch Yud Dalet. It means the Yoredeya. You know, the Shulchan Aruch is divided into four main codes. Of course, I'm talking about, I don't mean the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch, I mean the real Shulchan Aruch, okay? Divided into four main sections, okay? There's the Orach Chaim, which deals with laws for prayer and Shabbos and Yom Tov, reading the Torah and stuff like that, okay? Then you have Yoredeya, which deals with very much laws of kashrus, and also laws of mourning, and some other laws in between and so on. Then you have the Eben HaEzer, which deals with laws that pertain to marriage, divorce, inheritance, and things like that. Okay? And finally, you have the Choshen Mishpat, which deals with laws, courts, witnesses, adjudicating various laws that we find in the Torah itself, you know. So, if we look it up, we take a look at the Yoredeya, and then it says Simin, which means, you know, which section. The answer is Kuf Chof Hei, 125, okay? And finally you have Se'if, whatever it may be. Se'if means literally paragraph. In other words, you look up in the code of law, okay, and you find, you know, first of all you have to know which volume to look at, then you have to know what section, and then the section is divided into various paragraphs. And each law, you know, has its own paragraph, do you understand? So the very fact that it's over here for the word the Osar, and not for any of the discussion that went before on this particular problem, shows us that what? That the decision in the Shulchan Aruch is that it is prohibited. In other words, there's an agreement with this decision of Rav Yaakov.
Let me see where on this page you're reading that.
Okay. So it said it's the upper left hand margin.
Right there, yeah.
Right.
And the last one on the bottom.
Last one on the bottom, right above that line.
But you have to know how to decode it. Right.
So that's what I figured. It had to be a code.
Yeah, you have to know how to decode it.
I can't see what you're talking about. I can't make out. Okay.
Okay. If you take a look at the first one, take a look at the first one, there's much more over there. You noticed? The Aleph.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first reference that they have over there is Maimon. Of course, that means the Rambam, Yoram Chazaka. Right?
Yeah, no,
okay. Perek Beis. Right?
Yeah.
May Hilchos. Mem Aleph. What is Mem Aleph? I have to look that up myself, I mean, to see. Because he divides it according to subject matters. Okay? So that I have to look at, then it's under Halacha Yud and so on. Right. Then, after that, he has a reference to the Samag. Samag was also an early code book, which says, for Sefer Mitzvah's Gottel. Okay? And Samag divided it into either Lavid or Esed. Lavid means things that are laws that, you know, that are prohibited by the Torah. And Esed are laws, of course, that the Torah says you have to do. For example, let's say Shabbos, okay? Shabbos has different mitzvahs. There are many mitzvahs in connection with Shabbos which would be in the Lavid. You're not allowed to do this, not allowed to do that, and so on and so forth. But on the other hand, there are also affirmative, positive commandments for Shabbos. Shomer v'zocher, right? What is Shomer v'zocher? Means that you have to make kiddush, you have to honor the Shabbos, food, clothing, rest, etc., etc. These are things that you have to do in order, you know, these are affirmative actions. So the Samag divides it on that basis, and of course, a later compilation, which is not mentioned over here on the side, but it would be the Sefer HaChinuch, which is based upon Maimonides, but at the same time, he also divides it according to each Sedra in the Torah, and what are the affirmative commandments, and what are the negative commandments that you find out there. Of course, it means that there are many Sedras in which we don't find any at all. It's particularly true in Sefer Bereishis. I mean, where you have very few actual commands itself, okay? But on the other hand, you know, when you get to Shmos, Vayikra, and so on and so forth, then you have plenty of material. Okay. And after that, you have Tor Shulchan Aruch, Yeridea, etc., etc. Now, the Tor was the grandfather of the Shulchan Aruch. I don't mean literally, but what I mean is that the Tor was... was composed right by Rabbi Yaakov Alatur. Okay, he was the son of the Rush, another very great commentator, authority, and so on. And he is the one who made this arrangement into the four major volumes of the Shulchan Aruch. Of course, when you have actually Shulchan Aruch, you'll find many more than four volumes, but actually it's because some of them are so voluminous that you have to have two, three volumes to cover all the material in there, okay? And then along came Rabbi Yosef Karo a couple of centuries later, lived in Eretz Israel, and he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. But he used the Tor as the basis for that. And then, of course,
combined it.
Yeah. And, of course, with Rabbi Yosef Karo, I mean, he was a Sephardi, and so he therefore primarily used Maimonides' decisions, because Maimonides was a Sephardi, okay? And then there was a Rav in Poland by the name of Moshe Isserles, who corrected some of these things, or actually it's an addendum, right? He added his own in order to show what the Ashkenazi custom was based upon this. And so the Shulchan Aruch itself, the way it's printed, contains both the text of Rabbi Yosef Karo plus the comments of Rabbi Moshe Isserles, the Rabbok we call him, okay? And then after that, I mean, I don't have to tell you, but there are always commentaries upon commentaries. The more recent commentary, for example, was that of the Chofetz Chaim, and it's called the Mishnah Berurah, in which he took only the first part of the Shulchan Aruch, the Or HaChaim, which deals, as I said, with prayer, with Shabbos, with Yom Tov, and so on. And he wrote, in addition to having the text as we find it, but he added his own commentaries as well to it. And but there's the Aruch HaShulchan, also a contemporary of the Chofetz Chaim. And these are some of the things that we find. But this is what the reference on the side over there means, that particular reference. Others would be textual corrections or readings or something like that, that you find either in the right column or you find in the left column over there. Such as, for example, Hagos HaBach, this would be corrections that were made by the Bach based upon the fact that he felt that the text was not correct, and so he suggested, you know, what the correct text should be. You have to remember, this passed through centuries of being copied. This is before the printing press came into existence. And as a result, you know, in copying, sometimes people made errors. So therefore, the Bach tried to correct some of these errors, you see. There are others too. I mean, it's just that we have on this page over here that. And likewise, and so on. Then we have the Sodas Hashas, which also is corrections on occasion, and also tell you where a passage can also be found in some other tractate of the Talmud as well. As for example, the first one on the right over there tells you that it's from Tevul Yom, Perek Beis, Mishneh Zayin. Tevul Yom is one of the tractates in what we call Taharos. In other words, those laws that deal with those laws that deal with retaining purity and so on, Tara and Tuma and so on and so forth. And Tevul Yom, we had that reference recently. I explained to you, Tevul Yom means that he has observed 7 days. He's gone into the mikveh, but it's not yet sunset. So if he should happen to do anything, you know, before sunset, then he still is not clean. He has to wait until sunset for it to become finally clean or something like that. So you have different laws about the Tevul Yom also. If he touches something, what is going to be the result of it? Does that become unclean, and to what extent, and things like that. So, okay. Yeah. All right. Go a couple of more minutes and we'll call it a night. I have to confess I'm a little bit exhausted tonight. Yeah. So we'll go a little bit into the next side over there, Samach Chomet Beis. Still have a couple of lines, a couple of sentences over here. Okay. The last two words, Haru Chavisa. There was a story about a certain barrel. Okay. What about this barrel? The Ifka Lo'orcho happened to be cracked in its length. Okay? It was a crack in the length of the barrel. Ivrei Haru Evit Kechavim. So a certain goy saw that the barrel was cracked, so he ran to it, Chaboko, right? And he grabbed it around in order to do what? In order to prevent the wine from what?
Going
from
out.
Drinking it, obviously. Okay.
Did he drink any of it?
Well, that's the question. So, at any rate, Shaya Rafon Bar Papa. So, Papa gave permission. The Tamar, and there are those who say there was Rav Huna Bereinu of Yeshua, gave permission to do what? The answer is Nizbunei Le'oidei Kachovim. Not to drink it, but to sell it to the goy, you know, to sell it to them so that, you know, they don't lose out. Okay. And the Gemara continues and says, V'hadi mimer v'porka l'orka. This applies where it was split in length. Aval the pusye. What if the it was cracked in its width, like this, right? So it says, afilu bishasiyah shorei. So it's permissible even to be drunk. Now, if it says it's permissible to drink, who are they giving permission to drink to? The Jews! Obviously, if you sell it to the goy, what is he going to do with it? He's going to drink it, right? But why does it say specifically that he gave permission to drink? These are gave permission to Jews to drink this wine. Remember, I mean, the guy only grabbed it in order to do what? In order to try to save the barrel, right? To save the wine that was in those days. But he didn't do it because he wanted to do what?
Yeah, but I don't understand. What's the difference?
That's a different story. It's not clear to me either what's the difference.
If it was up and down, it was no good. But if it's a cross, it is good.
No, yeah, right.
You know, the Jewish tradition,
yeah.
If the crack is above the wine, it won't spill. And
right.
If it's below the wine, it's
right.
Going to fall out.
No,
I
don't think you do it
with
the wine.
According to Rashi, when the guy grabbed it, he did it, of course, with the intention just of pulling it, not of shaking it. In order to make a libation to Amid Zorah. This is the reason why he gave permission. Okay. But of course, I mean, it's a little hard to figure out what is the difference between vertical as compared to horizontal,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Other?
Okay. Rashi says as following. Okay. Why does he say that it's permissible, you know, when it's horizontal? He says, of all the first year, he says, it's, you know, horizontal. You know, the roof, that the hoil, the ain, the dollars, zeb is there, inasmuch as the upper part of the barrel did not separate from the lower part, because the upper part is sitting on the lower part. Only that, you know, a tiny bit is coming out of it, right? And the goy, he pressed down on them, below Havei Nogeya, and he didn't really touch the wine. So that's the reason why, because he didn't really touch the wine. All that he did is simply to put pressure on the barrel that, you know, it should it shouldn't separate.
Rashi
says
so.
Right. Right.
I don't agree with
him,
but it's all right.
No. Okay. My Tama. So, what is the reason? Says the Gemara. Okay, what he did is as if he would put a brick on top of it in order to weigh it down. That's it. Okay.
Good.
Just to put pressure on it, that's it. Okay.
Yeah.
Ahu oved kekhovim, there's a maise with a goy, dishtakach to have a kind of matzata. They found out that he was there in the wine press itself. Omer Ravashi, so Ravashi said, "Yi iko tefeach lihatfiach boi hadocha." Says, if there is still a little moisture left in the,
the
wine press. Okay, in other words, we have to assume that the wine was already gone. But the question is, if it's still a little bit wet from the wine that was there before, okay, then in that particular case, he says, in order to kosher it, it requires two actions. One is boy hadocha, you have to rinse it. Uvoy niguv, and also you have to perform something called niguv. So the question is, what is niguv? So Rashi explains, they would take ashes and water and scour it around, and then they would put a second layer of ashes in order to do it, okay? And this they find in later on the following chapter. Nesach?
Yeah, what's Nesach?
Nesach means libation.
Huh?
For libation.
Libation?
Yeah, Yain Nesach, the wine which is used for libation. But of course, here we're talking about, you know, a libation to idolatry. That's why we call it Yain Nesach, okay?
How does Rashi know the meaning of these obscure words?
Good question. Okay. Okay, let me just finish the sentence and then I'll answer your question, okay? The Ilo the Hadocha be Alba Sagane. But if there's nothing, you know, there is no moisture whatever left, it's absolutely dry, then how do you kosher it? The month of April, the year 2007, we continue now, Mavet Azara, Daf Samach, Omid Beis, in other words, 60B, with the new Mishnah that we have over here. And good luck. Okay. The Mishnah says, Oyve Techorem Shanimso Oyme Besal Habor Shod Yayin. Okay. Following situation. You have an idolater, and you find that he's standing right next to a pit or a system, whatever you want to translate it as, which contains wine. Okay? So, Nashri, what are you worried about? Is he going to touch it or something like that? So, in that particular case, then make it into Yain Nesach, right? So, the question is,
what do you do while you stand next to it?
He's standing there. There it's a gefilte. He's standing. Standing next to the pit, okay?
Next to the pit of wine.
All right. So, we're going to have different problems over here. Problem number one says, Yesh le milve olav also. Ein le milve olav mutar. Okay. So, this is case number one. Case number one says that if the guy is standing over there, right, and not only that, but the guy lent money to the Jew whose wine it is. You understand? It's not goyish wine. For goyish wine, just forget about the whole deal. It's no question. Okay. But this is Jewish wine that's in the pit. And the Jew borrowed money from this guy, okay?
Borrow money.
Right. And so the question is, what is the attitude of the guy towards the wine? Get it? Okay. So, im yesh le milve olav, if the guy has lent money to the Jew and the Jew owes him the money, then in that particular case, it is prohibited. You'll ask me why? The answer is very simple. The answer is because the guy figures, look, this guy owes me money. So if he doesn't pay, I'll take the wine for myself, sell it, drink it, whatever I want to do. But, okay? So that being the case, since he feels a certain proprietary interest in the wine itself, this is the reason why it's also, why it's prohibited. Okay? If on the other hand, ain lo milve olav, then mutar. If on the other hand, the Jew does not owe any money to him, then in that case, the wine is permitted. Why is the wine permitted? Because then we figure the guy is not going to take a chance on being sued for having spoiled the wine of the Jew. Of course, it's Jewish, it's the property of the Jew. So, this, so far, is understandable.
The Gemara gives us a more logical explanation.
Yeah, well, but I mean, this is how you have to understand it, right?
Yeah.
This is the way you understand it. This is the way Rashi understands it, too, you see. This, Rashi says, in other words, you know, it's the Jew who owes the money, and also, Niga, because the girl is not afraid to touch it. The Sevar, because he's with the opinion that says, Yomali Midi, if this Jew gets wise with me, if, in other words, he doesn't want to pay up or something, I'll tell him, okay, today he'll leave a chevi. Okay, give me this wine because this is what you owe me. Okay. All right, so that's case number one. Now here comes along case number two. What's case number two? Case number two is Nofal Laboer the Ola. Okay? The Goy fell into the pit. And then he came up again from the pit. Into the pit of wine.
He fell into the wine.
He fell into the wine, and then he got up again from it. So here, the Mishnah doesn't tell us what for the time being. Okay? Gemara will go back again to that case. Or another case, Midoda Bikonim. Okay? What happens if, for example, the guy is standing right near the wine, and what is he doing? He takes a reed and he sticks it into the wine in order to see how much wine there is. Okay? So again, how are we going to pasuk? Is it touching the wine or not? You understand? That's the question. If he drank from it, that's already a different story. There's no question. Right. Right. This is only for measuring to see what the, how much there is. You know, to determine the quantity, approximately. Or, hitus as hatsira, they cut it. There was a wasp on the wine. So what did he do? He took a reed, okay, and he used it in order to flick it away, okay. Naturally, I mean, the reed touched the wine. It's understood. I mean, in order to get rid of the wasp, okay.
Is that called stirring the wine?
No.
It's not the same as stirring it.
It's a question, right? This is a different case. Matpiach, in this case, he gave a clap on the wine barrel because the wine inside was literally boiling, but it doesn't mean boiling in this case. It means it was fermenting, okay?
The wine inside was right.
It was fermenting. It was fermenting, and so he wanted to try to get the fermentation, you know, to calm down, so he put his hand on it, okay? He gave it...
On the barrel?
On the barrel, right.
The wine.
Okay. So, the Mishnah concludes by saying, Bechol Elu, in every one of these cases that we mentioned, these all are things that happened. The Omru, and what did they say? In other words, what did the sages say after these individual events took place? They said, Yimocher, meaning that the wine could be sold so that it's not a total loss to the Jew, right? So in other words, you get that hadorah from it, but could he drink it? The answer is no. You could not drink it. This is what the sages said. However, along comes Rabbi Shimon, the matir. Rabbi Shimon says that it is permissible. And when he means permissible, obviously it means not just that it's permissible to be sold, but it's permissible for a Jew to drink the wine. So in other words, he is giving a very lenient opinion in this particular case. Okay?
He's the exact opposite of what the rabbi said.
Yes. Yes. Didn't pass it like they did. They said, okay, you can get Hanor, then they can sell. And we'll see actually that the consensus is to agree with Rabbi Shimon in this case. Not in every case do you find that the majority is necessarily the ruling opinion. More often it is, but sometimes the individual opinion carries more weight. Yeah. And this particular case, as we'll see from the Gemara, that Rabbi Shimon's opinion is the one which generally they accept. Okay? Then the final case that the Mishnah mentions in, over here, not all the Sachoris is Roke Bechamose. The idolater became very angry, and he took the barrel, the cask, whatever you want to call it, and he threw it into the pit. Zaha Yomasa, and this event also happened. The Hikshu, and the sages said, it's okay, you can drink this wine.
What happened in the last one?
The guy became very angry, whatever set him off, and in his anger he took the cask, a barrel, and he threw it right into the pit.
Where the wine was, right. So he threw the barrel into it.
So the question is, can the wine, you know, what is the status of the wine?
Which wine are you talking about?
No, the Jewish wine that's in the pit. In the pit. We're not talking about what's in the barrel. We're talking about what's in the pit.
Okay?
And in that particular case, the rabbi said it could be drunk. The Jew could drink it. They said it was kosher.
So what they're saying is, as long as the intention of the goy was not to have libation,
the wine could be.
No, for benefit.
Right. Okay. This would be the common denominator. Right.
They could consume the wine, but the other rabbis didn't necessarily. They could still get benefit from it.
Right. Except the first opinion, you know.
The first opinion
is prohibited if the Jew never paid up the money. But we're going to see now, you know, under what circumstances, too. Because the Gemara has to go into this in greater detail, obviously. Okay? So this is what the Gemara says. First of all, Omar Shmuel, all right? So, they go, you know, in order over here. What was the first case? The Jew owes money to the goy, right? So Shmuel said as follows, Who sheyesh lo milva lo seyayin? He says, if the loan is actually for the wine itself, in other words, it's not, you know, wine that belongs to a Jew who happened to borrow money for some other purpose, but the loan is specifically meant for the wine itself in the pit. And in that particular case, we said, if the Jew doesn't pay up, then what? Then it's also, okay, it's prohibited. So, Omar Rav Rashi, Rashi said, Masnisa Nabedaika, he says, we have another Mishnah, he says, where you can see this, because another Mishnah says, Hametaiher Yeno, actually would be the next Mishnah coming up, Hametaiher Yeno Shalevet Kechovim, Vidoste Vishuso, Vahaloke Segreis Kabalti Mimcho Bois Mutar. All right, it's a lot of words. Let's see what the words say, okay? The Mishnah that they're now quoting says as follows. Habitahir, a Jew is in a state of purity, right? And what is he doing? He is making wine for the benefit of the goy, but obviously, what about the wine that he's making? The wine is kosher wine, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the goy is a storekeeper or something like that. So he's making this wine for the benefit of the goy. Okay. So, and where does he place the wine? He takes this wine that he's made and here we're not talking about wine in the pit. We're talking about wine. He manufactures wine, and then he stores the wine actually in the goy's property. Okay? Rishusa. The goy's rishus. The goy's wine. The halah and the latter, meaning the goy, kaisev lo, he writes a note which says, his kabalti mimchor bos, I have received money from you. Even though what? even though the Jew didn't pay yet, this is the important thing, but still, in order to make sure that it is the wine is to be considered Jewish property and not the property of the goy, so he writes this note to say that I have received the money from you.
Promise,
like a promissory note, yeah. Exactly.
He owns it, but he doesn't.
Right, exactly. Right.
There isn't a question about he's got possession.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, who wrote the note?
The guy wrote the note
to
the Jew saying, I have received the money for this wine from you. Even though in reality, he did not get the money as yet. But the idea is that this way, the wine is the property of the Jew and not of the goy. Right, right, right. It's a legal business, okay? Aval im yitza yisrael lo tzion. However, if the Jew wants to take the wine now from the goy's property. You understand? We said he stored it in the property of the goy. Right? Say he brought it over to the goy's house and he stored it over there, or the backyard, or wherever it was. Okay? So, if he wants to now go and get it, then the ein manicho ashite lebo sof. Okay? So the goy doesn't let him take it until he pays up. So even though the note said I have already received the money, but that's only a legal fiction, so to speak, in order to make sure that the wine remains Jewish property and not the
so
property of the guy.
It's not property. It's not the Jew's property.
If the guy, if the Jew doesn't pay up,
yeah, but
that's correct.
But and if he doesn't pay up, but if he doesn't have possession, the first case he's got possession. Right? He's got possession even though he owes money.
He has possession even...
He owes money but he doesn't have possession yet.
He doesn't have possession. Technically, he owns it. But in reality, it's not budging from there until he pays up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the idea. Okay.
Well, in this case, it's not that he wanted to sell it to the guy. He just wanted a story there.
That's right.
That's the difference.
Right, right, right.
No, just
and obviously,
according to, the boy was processed the wine for, making Jewish wine.
Yeah, right. And Habitahir, right, means that the,
right.
Exactly, right, right, yeah. That he actually did, he manufactured the wine for him, right. Right, he produced the wine for him, that's correct. But he can't collect it unless he pays up.
Until he pays up.
Right. Even though technically it never went out of the possession of the Jew, but in reality, right, he can't take it out either unless he pays up.
How could the goy work for him in the manufacturing?
No, the goy's not working for him. The goy wants to sell the wine. But he wants to sell Jewish wine, doesn't want to sell goyish wine. Do you understand? In other words, he wants to sell wine that a Jew can come and buy and not, be buying a nesek. And this wine was produced by a Jew who's in the state of purity, etc., etc. It was glop wine. Mabahadrin, Mabahadrin. But it's Jewish wine, and yet it's not Jewish wine unless the guy pays up. Period. Okay. Right, right. It's a technicality. And it says, "Oh, you must have Beit She'an." This happened in Beit She'an. It's a very nice city. It's in the Jordan Valley over there, hot as blazes usually. But it's an old Jewish community in Beit She'an. So they still have a shul that dates back, to the Roman times over there with the zodiac on the floor over there and so on.
Hi.
Good evening. Yeah. The Osru, and guess what? the Chachamim said that this wine is also is prohibited. Why? Tamo de'en manicho. The reason being because in reality the Jew did not let the wine stay over there. He wanted to take it when he wanted to do it, but without paying up. So in that case, the Chachamim said, nothing doing. This wine is usher. Why? Because the guy has the right. If the guy doesn't pay up, to do what? He got it for himself, right? Or manicho, sorry. However, if he only stored it over there and he took care of his obligations, right, then in that case, the wine is permitted. So Shmar Minor, from this we see that Mirah also Yayin Be'inan, right, that as far as the note is concerned, it has to be in accordance with the various rules and regulations, and Shmar Minor, and this proves the case. Okay. So, Rashi, however, I have to tell you right now, goes into a different explanation. So we'll take a look at Rashi also. Okay? I'll start with the Rashi first of all. I'm also Yayin. One should also will you swear and say Yayin. Alright? So the Jew made the wine on behalf of the Goy, right? Apotheke. And he gave him, you know, a note, a promissory note to pay, right?
The Goy made the wine for the Jew.
No. The Goy makes the wine for the Jew. It's that's Goyish wine. It's the Jew who's making it for the Goy.
Okay.
But the idea, the second one, I'm a Tahir, you know, speaks of the fact, you know, that... you know, how is he making it? He's making it because the guy wants to sell kosher wine. That's the reason why. Okay? All right. So I'm doing the Rashi right now. Okay? Yeah.
What is the point where the Jew has to pay the guy?
He borrowed money from the guy.
For
whatever purpose. This particular case, the question is, did he borrow it because he needed to buy the grapes for the wine, or whatever it may be? It's a possibility.
This is not the same as the one who was storing it there.
Right.
This is somebody just borrowed the money.
He borrowed the money, right.
So that's a different case.
Yeah, but actually, I mean, borrowing the money, you know, it was because, the first case, the guy is standing simply over there, we don't know, and so we say that if the Jew owes money to the Goy and so on, then in that particular case, then it's also because the Goy has the right to come and collect at any time. So now they bring in the next Mishnah, which they quote at this particular point in order to show that the Jew actually made it on behalf of the Goy. So now what's happening? What is the situation? So first of all, the Jew gives him apotheke. He gives him a note, okay? Link notes a minute, right? That the guy could collect the payment from him. The hashto samchadate, right? The noga velo mirtas, because the guy knows that if he's not going to be paid, then he's not afraid to lend the money to the Jew, because why? Because he knows that he'll take the wine and he'll sell it himself. Okay. The wine is collateral. Okay. However, however, if the note that he has does not use the wine as collateral, but it's for some other reason or other that he borrowed the money, then in that case the wine is permitted, because the Jew needs the wine to sell in order to be able to pay the note. So the goy is not going to spoil the situation by doing what? By touching the wine and render it their missile, you understand? And he wants to get his money. So this is what Rashi says. Yeah.
I thought it was the goy who was going to sell this wine to Jew.
That's the second Mishnah that they quoted. Eventually it'll quiet down a little bit. I'm feeling not well this afternoon, so. Okay. So, the situation is, we said, the guy wants to get his money. If he knows that the Jew will pay up, will pay the note, right? Then in that particular case, he's not going to chip on the wine. But if he knows that the Jew is not going to pay up, then in that particular case, he'll claim the wine for himself and run the sell it and do business.
Right.
Okay. thank you. Let's stop the tape.
Why does he repeat Shema?
It's the style of the guy that they think about. Shema Bina. In other words, from this we understand that. This is what we understand, right? Shema Bina. But they're proving a point. So they use that expression. Sort of like a QED, you know. Yes.
The difference is one is a lien and one is a promissory.
Right, right. Okay.
And so promissory makes it okay.
Right. Now, yes. Now, Rashi explains the second Mishnah that was quoted. Okay? Hamataya Yeno Shalavit Kacham. He said, Yisrael. Shedorach anovim shall oved kechovim beheter kedei lemochlo Yisrael. This is the case where he says, according to Rashi, the Jew actually trampled out the grapes. Okay, in other words,
he pressed
the grapes, and the grapes belong to whom? To the goy. Grapes belong to the goy. Right, but this was permitted, it's beheter, it says, kedei lemochla Yisrael, because the guy wants to sell the wine to the Jew, to a Jew, okay? The yein eish saying, more eish levit kechavim, ad sheyim kevedo liyachaz ban. So he doesn't give the money to the guy until he sells it afterwards, v'noisim b'shuso, shall Oved Kerchavim. And what does he do? So he puts the wine and he stores the wine in the the property belonging to the goy. V'halo, and the latter, meaning the goy, Kosev Lehis Kabalti, right? He writes a note which says, I have received money. So he says, Im Kosev Leh Oved Kerchavim His Kabalti Mimcho Mois. If the goy writes that I've received money from you, klomer, in other words, areini ki'ilu kibalti mo'oz, it's as if I had received the money, she'eini bi'akev bi'otcha lahotzi yayim mishusi. I'm not preventing you from taking the wine out from my property, b'cholesh she'tirtzeh, at any time that you want to, then it's mutar. Then it's permitted to sell the wine. But Rashi now adds the following: Im yesh mafteach eichosom biyad Yisrael. This is true only, he says, if the Jew has the key or he has the seal. To seal it with a special seal, to show that it's Jewish, and belongs to this person. Okay. So, in other words, what Rashi is adding is, isn't it It's not simply, you know, stop in the Weltheim, but you have to also, the Jew, even though he stores it in the property of the Goy, understand? But he is the one who has to have the key in order to be able to do it. The Goy must not have the key, you understand? It's the Jew who has to have the key, even though let's say it's a room in the Goy's house, but there's a lock on the door, and only the Jew has the key to it, so that we know that what has happened, that the Goy had no access to it. So under those circumstances, then what? Then mutar, then it's a permissible business, okay? We see the same problem today. Jews, you know, who have hashgacha, let's say, in places where, you know, they may have goyish simchas as well as Jewish simchas and so on and so forth. You understand? So, for effective hashgacha, really, the Jew should have a key to the premises and not the goy to the premises, where the Jewish dishes and so on and so forth are kept.
The kosher kitchen.
The kosher kitchen, exactly, right. Yeah. So we see already, I mean, even in Rashi's time, you see, he's worried about this business. But they do.
If they have a kosher facility,
right, right. Exactly.
They do it anyway.
Right, right. Well, it's business, so they know, right. But, you know, at the same time, if you want to have a very strict kosher hashgacha, then in that case, the Jew has to be on top of it at all times, no question about it. No. Okay. Zehaya Masa Bebecha on the Osmo, right? And this event that we mentioned happened in Bechaan, you know, where the guy didn't want to pay up and so on. The cave in Shieshno Milva, so Yayim, inasmuch as the Goy has a note that the Jew borrowed the money from him and used the wine as collateral, right? By the way, Ovid. So the guy can do whatever he wants to, if the guy doesn't pay up, obviously. But if the loan has nothing to do with the wine, then it's commissionly a low dummy. Then it's as if, you know, he had, it just didn't exist. So that's for this, another reason. The Katani Russia, how long case of the Iskabalti Minchom, always Mutar. So then we understand why, if he writes simply the note saying, you know, I've already received money, that's, the wine is permitted for the Jew. The Hohocha, the Yeshli Milva, the Meyayan Olaf. Because the note actually, you know, if the wine is the collateral form, so the Katani, the cave in the love, Alaysa Yayin, who Mutar. So, in other words, if the wine is the collateral, then in that particular case, we're worried that what's going to happen, the Jew doesn't pay up, the Goy will take the wine, so in that case it's prohibited. But if the wine is not the collateral, then in that particular case, we know, again, as I said before, you know, that the Goy is not going to try to spoil the business by monkeying around with the wine, and therefore the wine is permitted. Right. Okay. Next. Right. Back to the Gemara now. Nofal Abor. Now we come to the next case that was mentioned in the Mishnah, right? The Goy fell into the pit. The Olon. And then he came up again.
He swam in the wine.
Now, this is very, very funny over here, I have to tell you. Omer HaTapa, Rapapa said, Lei Shanu Elisha Olamais. This applies where the guy who fell in comes up dead.
He's drowned in the wine.
He drowned in the wine.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't know. He had a heart attack. Very nice. We don't know. But at any rate, if he's dead, then we know that what? He didn't use it from it.
He lost consciousness.
There is another interpretation that the guy came up unconscious.
Unconscious.
So he came up unconscious, obviously, that also he didn't, you know, try to stir up the wine as another disorder, right? Avon Olochai, if he comes up 100% okay, then in that case also that the wine is prohibited. My Tama, what is the reason? So my pepper, I will send it, because did the May lay Kiyom Eidom. It's a very peculiar answer that he gives. He says, if the guy comes up alive, he's going to be so happy that it feels like it's a yontif. And a guy is yontif, what does a guy do? He makes a libation. So that,
therefore. Here you're worried about the guy touching the wine.
Right.
Here a guy falls into the wine, and now they're worried about whether it's the...
But he was, okay. While he was in the wine, he was unconscious. So he didn't do it, that's the point.
Huh?
While in the wine, he was unconscious.
So what? But he was in
the
wine, he didn't touch the wine.
Yeah, but he wasn't making a libation.
But
he comes up alive, he wants to express his gratitude, so he makes a libation.
He says he's not alive.
Of course, he makes a lachaim with the wine. What do you want? But if that's the case, I mean, how is, what is a guy do? I eat machta lachaim, I go machta echata lachaim. Next case. Mother don't become right? Okay. When he used the a reed in order to measure, you know, what was the depth of, right? And then it says, Kolelo ha'yamaseh v'yamu yamocheh, right? So in all the cases then that follow in the Mishnah, so the sages said that the wine could be sold. As we said, it means that you can have hanor, right? But, you know, it could not be drunk. On the other hand, Rav Shimon matir. Rav Shimon said that it's permissible. In other words, according to him, the wine could be drunk by a Jew.
Did the rabbis make the decision that it was permitted?
Well, it was because the question is whether the guy, when he stuck it in, was he doing anything other than that? But the obviously, all that he was doing, all he was interested in was the measure. But they want to be very sure, you know, that nothing happened. So they're going the extra mile in this particular case. Going the extra mile, say that. You could sell it, but don't drink it, okay? Omar Avera Bar Abba. So Rabbi Avera said, Yonuchel El Rab Shimon Barachas Al Reshei. I, Agizud, and Kepalah from Rabbi Shimon, he says. May brachas, you know, may many blessings come to the head, literally, of Rab Shimon. It's what we say, I mean,
he's praising Rav Shimon because he said you can eat.
Abrach of Dain Kepala, right. Exactly. He's happy. He's happy that Rav Shimon was Matir, right.
Yeah.
Kishahu Matir, right?
Matir.
Because he says, Kishahu Matir, Matir, I feel the Mishasir. Because when Rav Shimon says that it is permissible, then you know that it's permissible even for a Jew to drink it. If Rav Shimon says, nothing doing, then Oysa Filu Bahano. Then in that case, mean you cannot even sell it in order to get some Hano. In other words, he's very consistent. Either it's all kosher or nothing doing.
Right.
Right.
He had a
tremendous reputation. Right. His Hechsher was good. Absolutely. Omer Abchir Bereda Abba Vachnamani. So Abchir, the son of Abba Bar Nachmani, he said, Omer Rav Chista, in the name of Rav Chista, he said, Omer Rav, who said in the name of Rav, the Amrilei, or it's another version that says, Omer Rav Chista, Omer Zeire, the Rav Chista said the name of Zeire, he said, Halacha ke Rabbi Shimon.
No, okay. Shimon, wow.
Yeah, Halacha follows Rabbi Shimon. Iker the Amri, there were those who say, Omer Rav Chista, the Rav Chista said, Omer Li Abba Bachodon Hochi, that the Abba Bachoron said the following to me, Omer Ziri, that Ziri said, Halacha Rav Shimon. Okay, fine. Ve'ein Halacha Rabbi Shimon. After all the praise and everything else, why?
How come?
He had all these other
authorities.
They just took his
house
away.
Absolutely, they took it away.
After all praise,
He was too liberal. He was too liberal, right. Right. Well, we have to say that as far as Zeiri is concerned, you notice they quote Zeiri in both cases. First they say Zeiri said that what? And Halach is Karabi Shimon, right? Yeah. And now they say that even though people say that Halach is Karabi Shimon, ain't Halach is Karabi Shimon. So, what are you going to do? The answer is, don't fall into the wine. Don't use the wine. That's the collateral.
You know, after all
of
this,
here, the question is the measuring. It's just measuring.
Yeah. Right.
So that's actually kind of a strict standard.
Yeah.
Well, the standard is that they don't want the they don't want the boy to be there at all when you get right down to it.
True. True. It's always a fear, you know, that maybe he did something.
What if he's? But many ages ago, I thought the idea was that the boy that's measuring was sort of an inspector, like a
Right. Correct.
What can you do in that situation if he comes on in official capacity?
Yeah.
And he measures, that means it's only fit.
We decided that as long as right. So there's also a question: how much of a quantity, and where did it come from, etc., etc. It's not very. The best thing is, you bottle it, and make sure it's sealed well, and then you don't have any problems.
And they have to put a double seal on it,
didn't
they?
Yes, yes. So, well, that's the kind of seal that we have on the bottle. Right.
Then nothing could happen to it until you opened it.
Correct. Okay. All right. Then the last case, if you remember, was the guy became angry, right? He threw barrel into the wine. Not El Chavis, right? He threw this anger, the bar, right into the cistern over there, the pit where the wine was. Right? They said it's okay. So, I'll tell you what. This is a very technical business over here. So, I think I'll call a halt tonight because my throat is not very good.
All right.
And, Mr. Shen, I hope I'll get better. Right. So we'll start from this next week, okay? we'll go over it, right. Because they have now the business of the Zob. The Zob is a technical business, you know. Somebody, we read about it in...
You're talking about Zob?
Zob, right. And,
Like it's a rod.
It's not Saras, even though we have Tazrim and Sarah together. at the end of Parsha Tazria, then we have the business that deals with the Zov. What is a Zov? Zov is a person who has admissions, discharges, right?
Yeah.
And it's above and beyond, you know, what would normally happen in a seminal admission. If it happens three times, and so on, in succession, then in that particular case, we suspect that he is guilty. He is suffering from a disease that makes him impure. And in that particular case, then there are certain things. If he touches, he sits on something, he touches something, moves it, whatever it may be, so it's prohibited. Yeah. It becomes tummy, okay? So now they're going to make a comparison, at least this person, but it's Rav Ashi makes a comparison between the Yain Nesach and between the Zav. But whether it's a very good comparison with somebody, it's a different story.
Yeah.
But this is, so yeah, rather than to go into all the technicalities, we'll discuss it next week. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Thank you. Rabbi Chanai. Okay, we'll count the Omer. Last night we counted 22.
Yes.
Okay. Let's say it was 22. 23 days in the Omer count.